Lunch with Leon.
Hello and welcome to Lunch with Leon, episode 105. So I'm talking to you from Lyon in France, where I'm at the RATP Dev Senior International Leadership Team event. This is our annual gathering of our senior managers from around the world. But before I left the UK, I caught up with this episode's guest. Last week was the annual conference of ALBM, the Association of Local Bus Managers. You might be forgiven that over 90% of buses in the UK run by the major groups, maybe there aren't any local bus managers anymore. Far from it. ALBM is enjoying remarkable support and is increasingly influential. So after an exhausting week, I caught up with their chair, David Astill, who's also managing director at Nottingham City Transport, and asked him how it went.
It was one to remember, I'd like to think. The team at NCT put on a fantastic conference, which I'm very proud of and proud to be associated with, Leon.
Amazing. And how many people?
Over the 3 days, we had something like 400 different delegates join us.
Oh, that's amazing.
Short stay for all 3 days. Sure. Some came just for the golf. the majority on the first day. Can you believe we were playing golf in Nottingham in temperatures of 27 degrees?
I know.
I played golf in Spain.
who says there's no global warming?
Indeed. And but most delegates, as normal, came for Tuesday and Wednesday. And I think we had something like just over 300 delegates in the theatre for the main speakers on the Tuesday afternoon, which was great.
I'm sorry I couldn't be with you, but obviously I've heard some things about it, and it'd be fantastic for you to give us the highlights. And you had some Metro Mayors in place too, right?
Yeah, I mean, clearly, we now have a elected mayor for the East Midlands Combined Authority.
Sure.
Now, when I say East Midlands, it's really Nottinghamshire and Derbyshire. Leicestershire isn't at the show. Leicester City has its own mayor, as you know, Sir Peter Salisbury. Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire, and the two cities within those counties, the four authorities make up the combined authority of the East Midlands. We were very fortunate to be joined by Claire Ward, the Labour mayor for that area, and she made a very strong presentation, which was well received by the delegates, and it was very heartening to hear Claire talk about her commitment to bus partnership working and wanting to build on what we have rather than tear up what's there and start again.
Amazing. Because that's certainly something that came through when I was talking to Bill in the last episode, is this huge level of uncertainty that can get created as a result of the buses bill. The last thing our industry needs is uncertainty, isn't it?
Yeah, but we have lots of it, don't we? Uncertainty if you're in an area where franchising is a possibility. We have uncertainty over the future of the CAP National Fair. We have uncertainty over labour costs. Clearly, the cost of employing people, already our biggest cost centre, that's increased again from April. So there's plenty of uncertainty out there, Liam.
Indeed. And, of course, my old friend and colleague David Leader was in full form.
David was on very good form, and David made some very strong points.
Tell us more about David's presentation.
Okay, well, David's excellent, isn't he, at analysing the detail and being able to put it in a very clear, concise manner. And he says there's a perception, certainly amongst the Metro mayors, that there's going to be plenty of more money of the sort that Andy Burnham see. And David thinks that that's very unlikely. We're going to have the spending review of all spending reviews, probably, and we'll know the results of that very soon. And it's David's view that the same money that's been there to sponsor Andy Burnham's franchising scheme in Manchester won't be there for the benefit of the other Metro mayors. And I suspect we're all coming to a similar conclusion.
Well, I do remember a very long time ago, and back in my time in London, lots of people wanting London-style franchising, but of course you also need London-style funding.
Indeed. And in the east, to the east of the East Midlands, we have Lincolnshire, and at the local elections, they've appointed their first mayor for the greater Lincolnshire area, and I believe even the mayor that's been elected there in the days following the result, has said that she wants to set up transport for Greater Lincolnshire to replicate what's there in the net areas. I think that needs a bit more thought.
It does. And that's a Reform UK mayor, is it not? That's
when we talk about uncertainty, Leon, of course, that's a new uncertainty that's only come to light really in the last 14 days. I don't think there were many commentators who expected Reform to do as well as the party did do in local politics. 10 councils now controlled by Reform. Mm. Indeed, in the East Midlands, 2 of the 4 authorities now controlled by Reform. And I don't think any of us really know what their transport priorities and policies are going to be.
No, I was about to ask you, but that's because I don't know. And that's because none of us know. I also get the impression, the only glimmer I've got from Reform UK is that they're no great fans of decarbonisation. And they think that this is something of an expensive fad, don't they?
They do. And as you know, so many operators, including Nottingham City Transport, have been putting a lot of time and management effort into moving towards an electric fleet. It would be very interesting and will be very interesting to see whether those initiatives continue in areas where Reform are going to be the controlling party.
No, indeed. Well, you and I are old enough to remember that the smaller parties often do quite well in local elections, but tend to fall flat on their face at general elections. And we saw that with the SDP and the Liberal Democrats
we did.
Over time. But they're here for now. And
have big sights, don't they? Have big targets in their sights.
They do indeed. And as I say, the whole decarbonisation thing looks like one area of transport policy where they will ease off the work that many of us all have been doing as part of a national agenda.
Does you wonder? I mean, there is so much momentum behind the net zero agenda. You wonder whether the juggernaut is going too fast to stop it. I'm not sure.
No, indeed. So just harking back to David Leader, one of the points he always makes, and I'm sure he made it at Album, which is, of course, how much bus you could get from a small saving on rail, because the cost of rail is now astronomical by That's any right. stretch of the imagination, and is totally unaffordable.
Yes.
And he always makes the point, in my experience, that a shift from rail to bus would benefit very many more people over a much wider area much more quickly.
Yeah, and he did make the point that I think £200 million overspend on one of the most recent rail initiatives.
Oh, that's the Northumberland line, which is 100% over budget. That's right.
And £200 million spent on bus priority would deliver a lot of bus priority. Which was quite fitting, because on Wednesday morning, Louise Collins from Transport Focus, Louise kind of came along and gave her assessment of the 2025 Transport Focus results. And no surprise, the two key wants from bus users are reliability and punctuality and fast journey times, as in, they don't want to see, in order to achieve punctuality, customers don't really want to see operators padding out schedules, which is what we've traditionally done, of course, in order to guarantee us that reliability. Well, if they want direct, fast journeys, the answer has to be bus priority rather than less efficient schedules to keep buses on time.
No, indeed. And we've said on this programme before, a long time ago, Professor David Begg did a calculation that roughly showed that the shortfall of revenue against cost in London was about the same as the cost of congestion. That's to say, you could eliminate the funding shortfall at operating level if you could run the same service with fewer drivers and fewer buses.
Indeed.
Because they'd be more efficient, they would be faster, of course, and you wouldn't need so many of them. And it seems to me that, as you say, we've been padding out schedules For a number of reasons, you know, traffic commissioner reliability, punctuality targets, local authority punctuality targets, and as you say, Bus Users UK and surveying and so on. But actually, I mean, you know, and we have it here in London, we've got some bus corridors here now where bus speeds are down to walking speed. And you really are not going to get a bus from Aldwych to Trafalgar Square because you almost certainly can walk it quicker.
Oh, indeed. In the centre of Nottingham, we've got the same issue. We have benefited, of course, in Nottingham from having very brave politicians traditionally, something like 28 kilometres of bus lane just in the city of Nottingham area. But even so, keeping buses on time remains a challenge, but it's more priority. We need not less.
Yeah, no, indeed so. Was there anything at the conference on disabilities, accessibility and awareness, David?
There was plenty of focus on the Wednesday morning around well-being, relating to staff, really. And Alex Warner did a very good piece on that. As did Carolyn Wilson, head of client engagement at Initiative Recruitment. So we certainly covered those areas. And indeed, I was on a panel talking about staff welfare and the importance of being more flexible in our approach to working practices. I mean, certainly at Nottingham, we've, like everyone else, we suffered from very high levels of staff turnover, certainly in the aftermath of the pandemic. I think our driver turnover went up to about 20%. And we hit on the revolutionary idea, Leon, of asking our staff what they actually thought. Can you believe that one?
That's revolutionary. I don't know where you got that idea from.
A cutting edge thing to do. First time we've done that in over 140 years. And on the back of that, we have changed a lot of our shift patterns. We've got something like 10% of our drivers working part-time, another 8% working flexible shifts. And by that, I mean almost, in many cases, their own shift to work around their own domestic circumstances, because childcare and looking after partners who aren't particularly well are all issues, aren't they? And we've introduced a lot more four-day week working. And we're in a situation where we've got turnover down to 8%, which we're particularly pleased about.
No, I mean, you must be delighted with that. Well, look, as a bit of a plug here, a future guest here on Lunch with Leon is going to be Anna Earle. She's a nutrition consultant, and she works for a company, Nutrivival Limited. And Anna gave us a presentation at Bus Centre of Excellence and gave us a lot of insight into the whole hydration nutrition side of shift workers. Yeah. And, you know, and she told us some things that, frankly, I ought to have known, but I didn't know. And for example, in the particular case of Ramadan, of her, those members of staff who choose to fast during sunrise and sunset, when that falls in the summer and you can get 11 or 12 hours worth of fasting, they are in some cases cramming themselves with high sugar drinks at the start of the day. And the effect of that on the body, of course, is that having got all that much sugar on board, it has to then throw a lot of insulin at it in order to bring it down to manageable levels. And then over the course of day, the insulin is trying to control this sugar intake in such a way that, in fact, you're getting very highs and very lows. And therefore, she's pointed out and has researched that the incidence of type 2 diabetes in shift workers generally is higher than the general population. And nobody more than we know about shift work, because pretty well all of our operating and engineering staff are on shift work.
Yeah. I mean, we know that it takes special people to work the sort of shift patterns we expect from our staff. You know, it's not factory shift work, is it, where they're working earlies, lates, middles. I mean, almost a different shift every day for a lot of drivers. We do expect a lot of them, and in return, we need to look after them.
No, for sure. So Alex Warner did the well-being part of the conference, and Alex is always good value.
Yes, Alex is always good value, and I was on the panel with Sarah Boyd from Lothian and Vito from Blaisfield, and that went very well. And of course, we haven't mentioned yet, dear old Roger French.
Oh,
Roger gave an enlightening, uplifting presentation at the start of Wednesday morning. looking at all the positive aspects of album operation, where you've got local teams and managing their local networks, and compared that to perhaps what we might say a couple of the less dynamic big groups, where there isn't that same local focus. But Roger probably left me with the most obvious thought at the end of the conference. Obviously, ALBM stands for the Association of Local Bus Managers. If you take the local, so if you take the L out of ALBM, what are you left with?
Yes. He said that on stage, did he?
He did, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah,
Good.
that's with a slide to demonstrate the point.
Good man. Good man. See, if you didn't get to ALBM, then look at what you missed. You missed a luminary
Absolutely.
like Roger French drawing that to our attention.
Yeah. And he's quite right. Yeah. For ALBM, our strength is local ownership, local management, local people running their local bus service.
Yeah,
We've
and
got, and that was reflected in the transport focus results, of course, where we were, as ALBM, very proud to point out that four of the top five operators in the 2025 operator league table, of course, are ALBM members. I mean, we think that,
And also that does remind us that in the case of the major groups, several of the major groups have recently been taken over by private equity, infrastructure funds, or whatever. And we know there that streamlining, cost cutting, efficiency, and centralization are some of the key tools in the box of those sorts of financial institutions. And certainly in one or two of the conversations I've had, those are all the wrong things to do. Because I think we might pat ourselves on the back and say that over our careers, David, we've ripped out quite a lot of cost over the years. And whilst there's always a bit more you can do, I don't think that our bus industry generally has got a cost problem. It's got a revenue problem.
Yeah, indeed.
And if I had money available to invest, I would be investing on the revenue top number rather than trying to save five bob on the price of paper clips.
Yes, and I agree with you, Leon. And of course, and Roger made this point, there's probably more government funding in the bus industry now than there has been since dereg. If you include BSOG, BSOG Plus, BSIP, and BSIP Plus. And we really need to be making the most of that. I think David Leader made the point that overall, in the scheme of things, government funding into bus is probably just over 50% of revenue now. And that is a stark change to the picture where we were before the pandemic, when government funding was probably only about 30%.
No, indeed. And of course, whilst people are very concerned about the proposals in the buses bill, you can't deny the fact that if public funding is at least 50%, then the government wants a say in it, because they're not going to give you the money and tell you to get on with it. They're going to say that in return for all this money, we want, and that includes concessionary fares, it includes decarbonisation, it includes a whole raft of things. And you will know, my greatest worry always about devolution is this problem of local authorities or agencies not being given the adequate funding to look after the obligation that they've inherited. And that starts to shift you to having to raise more money locally. And in fact, that's what's happening in London, of course. There's an increasing funding inside Greater London in order to for the network, as opposed to from central
And
government.
there'll be huge regional variants across the country, of course, won't they? Some local authorities are far more proactive in their support for bus services than others. In this part of the world, in the provinces of the Midlands, the government funding is way below that 50%. We are still predominantly commercial bus operators.
Yes, indeed. And the other one, that
The
always
met
continues,
area is pushing it.
and
As always the case, the areas that probably most need the funding will be those that are possibly getting the least.
And of course, was a perfect example of why BSOG was such the brutal instrument that it was, because it rewarded remunerative mileage and unremunerative mileage equally. And therefore, the more miles you ran in a lucrative urban area, the more you got. And yeah. And in the more rural areas, the less you got. And that has always been a difficult one. But I also I am just intrigued now on the on this whole area of funding, because I think the government hears it. The one thing I've never been able to crack with any government, including this one, is the notion that whilst transport is just a department that spends money, all the benefits in health, social services, mm-hmm. education, and the wider economy accrues to the health service or the social services or the education department or the treasury. You know, we are the big enabler that allows all these things to happen. And without us, then these various things would be much harder to operate. We don't get any credit, do we, for the benefit we deliver to the wider economy and to
other departments? That's very true, but there just isn't that sort of joined up thinking, is there, either in government or in the wider community, if we're honest?
No, not at all. And in some discussions the other day, where in order to reduce car dependency, for example, the patches that carers looked after were made smaller so they could walk and cycle and use the bus more and use their car less. So nothing to do with us, but it benefits us. A radical change in the way of working inside a particular area promoted walking, cycling and bus use at the expense of private cars. Well, great thing to do, but we never joined up to have that conversation, and neither are they. But
I would say, Leon, we are an agile industry as a whole, aren't we? We're in for 40 years now, we've been an agile commercial industry. We can do a lot without needing a lot of government funding. And we had Daniel Pearman came over from Leicester to describe what they've been doing under their wonderful BSIP in Leicester City.
Yep.
Where they've achieved a lot. They've introduced multi-operator ticketing, a common brand across the network, common ticketing. And Leicester initially didn't get any basic funding.
Golly.
So as agile commercial operators, there are still things we can do if we've got a proactive, supportive local authority that doesn't need a lot of money to actually get bus ridership up. And I think bus ridership in Leicester is higher than it was before the pandemic, which is fairly unusual.
We had Bus Centre of Excellence conference in Leicester a couple of years ago, and it was magic to see what had happened. You know, I remember it because it was a First Group subsidiary in my time,
yes,
and a not very good one at that. And it is now transformed, both in terms of fleet, investment, decarbonisation, street furniture, timetables, infrastructure. The whole presentation of the thing in Leicester is a million times better than I knew it.
The point is not all about the money, doesn't it?
No, indeed. It's about how you spend it and spending it wisely.
It's about having the drive and determination, enthusiasm, to get on and do it.
No, indeed.
If you've got willing partners, and Nottingham's a good example of that over the years, if you've got willing partners who want to make the product as good as you can, there's a lot you can do without throwing lots of money at it.
Did anything come up, David, about this whole business of local authorities making direct awards to their own bus companies as part of the buses legislation?
It did come up, and it's fair to say the stance of CPT and Alban is that we support the concept of direct award to existing municipals on the basis it protects a government, a local government asset, which has got a value to the community. But we clearly have an understandable reservation about extending the concept of direct award to any new LABCOs, as the municipals, of course, now refer to as LABCOs, on the basis that we'd really, where areas are going to go for franchising, we'd like to see competitive franchising in place where existing operators have got the opportunity to bid for those tenders rather than the new mayors and the new LTAs go straight to direct award for a new company. I've got to be honest, my personal view, I think it's unlikely. You know, we've just been talking about the comprehensive spending review. Do we really think local authorities are going to be in a position to splash the cash on setting up new bus companies? I don't think so.
No, okay. So the government stance, which I think is they think the chances of it happening to any scale is very small,
yeah.
Then we're arguing on a point of principle where the consequences may not be very great.
We are, there's two lines of thought. The fact that no local authorities are currently saying that they're interested, that's probably not a reason to sweep it under the carpet and do nothing. Certainly the major players or those that feel a threat would rather see something in the bill, subsequently in the Act, that says, well, hold on a minute, in the first instance, competitive tendering really should be the way forward. New lab codes should be really there as a last resort sort of operator for areas where there's little competition in the franchising market.
And so, David, Album itself, it seems to be going from strength to strength. What's happening behind the scenes?
Well, we're going through a bit of a transition. As you know, Bill Hiron, who was on your last podcast, has recently stood down as chair. And I've been very fortunate and very humbled to be asked by my peers to take the chair's role on. And I've assured them I will do my best in that direction. But we're also in the process of changing policy advisor as well. Many of you, of the listeners, will know Tony DePledge, formerly managing director at Blackpool, then with Arriva. Tony is now standing down. Over the course of the next few months, he's very keen to help Album ensure that the buses bill has gone through royal assent and come out the other side of Parliament before he does stand down. And I'm pleased to announce that Alex Perry, who will be known to many of you, formerly with National Express and Arriva, will be taking on the mantle of policy advisor to Album. So there's two really big changes there. You know, the chair and the policy advisor are big, big jobs, very influential jobs.
Well, look, that's fantastic news. Firstly, Tony DePledge, whose career I have followed too long to remember. In fact, I think I remember an Album conference in Blackpool, where in the foreword to the brochure for the conference, Tony said that he's a classics scholar and didn't think, to be in the transport industry, he didn't think a working knowledge of Latin was necessary per se. Yes. Which is a typical Tony comment, and he listens to this, so I know he won't mind me calling him out about that. And he also had some wonderful colloquial French, like how to say in French certain phrases, like having ideas above your station, which in French refers to a
station. Told me similar stories. Said at least he could do schedules in Roman numerals.
Indeed, he could. So, and Tony, who I love to bits, and in fact, I was his successor as a trustee of the Rhys Jeffries Road Fund, which is a charity which gives out money for worthwhile research projects.
Yes, I think I was a beneficiary of that many years ago.
There you go. So I followed Tony on that. And as for Alex Perry, well, of course, he worked for me because he ran Bristol Buses for me when I was commercial director for First Group. Yes. So Alex worked for me in Bristol. He went off. And as you said, subsequently was in Arriva and indeed in National Express. So when he was at National Express and I was in First, of course, then he and I were negotiating with each other over the National Express contracts. And if he's going to be the policy advisor for Album, I think that's brilliant because Alex is a super guy. He's really clever. He knows all the ins and outs. He's got fantastic experience. So look, with you as chair and Alex as policy advisor, this is an exciting time for Album, isn't it?
Thank you. I think, yeah, I mean, as you say, it's about maintaining. Tony and Bill have really put Album on the map, and we are taken seriously as an organisation.
And especially
across the industry and in DfT.
Yeah, and especially given the actual number of real local bus companies has gone down in a structural way, the fact that Album is now punching so strongly, bearing in mind the way the industry is dominated by the major groups and there's a manifest lack of localization in many areas. I think that's tremendous. Yes. So
we pride ourselves. We've got we represent something like 40 different bus companies with a combined fleet of about 5,000 vehicles. You know, Album album is significant.
No, indeed. No, indeed. That's outstanding. Very good. David, look, as ever, a pleasure. We've talked for half an hour, and as you said, we've only just got started, so that tells you something. So thanks very much indeed for joining us today. If I may say so, in the immediate aftermath of an extraordinarily busy week of meeting and presenting and taking questions.
It's been a very rewarding week, Leon.
I'm sure it has. So my guest today on Lunch with Leon has been David Astill, who is the chair of Album, the Association of Local Bus Managers. You'll find them at albumbus.co.uk. So do please go and look at their website. David, of course, in his spare time is the chief executive at Nottingham City Transport, and Nottingham itself is a really good place to go and look at what good public transport looks like, and a great case study in what can be done in one of our more important cities here in the UK. Lunch with Leon is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine. You'll find them at passengertransport.co.uk. I've really enjoyed our conversation today with David, and I wish Album great success. And David, under your chairmanship, I'm sure that's assured. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Leon. It's been my pleasure. And thank you to everyone who's been listening.
Lunch with Leon star David Astill, who is chairman of Album and last week hosted their amazingly successful annual conference. He's also chief executive officer of Nottingham City Transport. Lunch with Leon is presented by Leon Daniels. The opening music is by rock star and altogether good guy Dean Friedman, who is performing on stage in UK this summer. Please check out deanfriedman.com. PR support for Lunch with Leon is by Stark Communications. It is produced in association with Passenger Transport Magazine, which you can find at passengertransport.co.uk. Although artificial intelligence was used in this episode, no busmen were harmed during the production.